Tuesday, May 18th, 2021. I'm Emma Lieberman, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online, since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Republican House Leader Kevin McCarthy says that he opposes a bipartisan commission to investigate the January 6th insurrection, which begs the question, what are you afraid of finding out? Oh, wait, forget it, my bad. We already know. The Biden administration announced on Monday that beginning on July 15th, 39 million families will receive monthly payments of $300 per child under 6 and $250 per child 6 to 17 years old. MTV responded by quickly changing the name of its most popular show to 16 and getting paid twice. Rudy Giuliani's son Andrew Giuliani has announced his candidacy to be governor of New York. Apparently, someone explained to him that he can't pardon his dad in his present position as Trump apologist. It's being reported that Donald Trump only wants tall and buff Secret Service agents to protect him and his family. And if you believe the recent reports, so do Tiffany and Donnie Jr.'s ex-wife. Issa Rae is heading up HBO's Project Greenlight revival, hoping to find the next generation of female filmmakers. If you're unfamiliar with the show, it's basically The Voice or American Idol, but for people with six-figure film school debt. NBC announced that Jimmy Fallon will be hosting a reboot version of the classic game show Password. Ass kiss. Jimmy Fallon? Correct! A new study on Asian and Pacific Islander representation in film found that two-thirds of these characters are stereotypes, and one-third of all leads in this category are played by Dwayne Johnson. So if you're an Asian American actor, you're literally stuck between The Rock and a hard place. Ricky Schroeder has closed his Instagram account after blowback for the video he posted of a Costco employee turning him away from the store for not wearing a mask. Ricky, you know, just a suggestion, but next time you might want to upload these videos to Parler instead. On his show last week, non-doctor or scientist Joe Rogan said that woke culture has gotten so bad that it's forcing straight white men to stop talking. The fact that he said this on a show that Spotify is paying him $100 million to host says everything you need to know about Joe. Ariana Grande married her fiancé Dalton Gomez at a surprise private ceremony. I guess she told him that if he didn't love her harder, that she's gonna have to say, thank you, next. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
According to Veronica, my mom's watching, so I'm going to try not to use the F word tonight.
Good luck.
Okay, wait, hold on. Let's not talk about Matt Gaetz or Trump. Just don't let me not talk at all.
And that's the show. Good night, everybody.
Tomorrow. Elizabeth.
Hello. Happy Tuesday. I don't have a good joke. I totally blanked. I'm so sorry. I was looking at Twitter right before this, and that app will kill your brain, apparently. So, sorry.
That's okay, Elizabeth. Joe.
Hi, everyone listening on Google Podcasts. A very happy National Cheese Souffle Day. It's also National Visit Your Relatives Day, which explains why Pete's mom is watching the show. Also, here's a little insider. After all this time doing the show, we don't actually have a round table.
It's a square.
Might have to change that for the
reason. You notice that now, Joe? You've been saying it for like 15 months. This is the first time you notice that.
I want to get people. I feel like it's been 15 months. Like they're our friends now. So I want to
The charade.
So I want to give
end.
Them like the inside track.
That's something. Yeah, that's something we're gonna have to keep in mind when we do the relaunch.
So. What color should our table be for our table talk in the future? Like when we're
I don't know.
Like not red. It can't be a red table talk.
Oh,
so
no.
Are
we?
Because
I don't want to have any of those.
Emasculate himself here. I don't know.
Okay.
You should.
Hello, it's also International Museum Day. I just can't wait for the Grammy Museum to open because that is my favorite museum.
Okay, I didn't know that they had a date for that, but of course they have a date for everything.
Yeah.
Ian.
Hi, Pete's mom.
Now, before we get started, I just want to bring something up real quick that I have to get off my chest. It's a little bit of a rant. If you have a Venmo account, which all of us, I'm assuming, do, please keep your transactions private. I don't need to know how much you pay your Boo Fang for bomb-ass sushi every time I log on to my Venmo account to make a payment for a service. I just don't understand why they make that public. It's like the weirdest thing in the world. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, PSA, I don't need to know what you're spending your money.
This message brought to you by Matt Gaetz. Maybe come up with a different label for your Venmo transaction.
There you go.
Don't even talk about Matt Gaetz, please.
Okay. I agree.
Yeah, it's just like really weird. Like, I logged on to Venmo today to make a payment for someone who provided a service. And the first thing I see, it's like all these people that I know, how much they're paying other people for stuff. And again, I don't care that you have a Venmo account. I have one too. But why make, I don't understand the whole public thing. It's weird. I don't know. I think it's weird.
I think some people are just too dumb to shut it off.
Shut it off. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like mine's like completely private. I'm like, I don't want people to know.
I use the notes to guilt my friends when they like, oh, I don't have the mic. Can you take it and I'll just Venmo you? Then I'll make sure in the notes it says something horrible what it's for.
Oh, so. I see. Okay.
and Danny.
Yes.
The Grammy Museum opens Friday.
Yes.
I'll be right back. My
and
as far as what you were saying, Veronica, it's true because it seems like people like to floss, you know, what they have, supposedly, but they don't actually floss, you know, and that's what they should be doing.
See, I think that's part of the case, but I also do think like some people just like don't really care, but like, it's like, I don't want people to know what I'm spending, like, my money on. Like, it's none of it. Like, nobody's business, you know? It's just weird.
Can I jump in for 1 second real quick?
Yeah.
When Elizabeth comes back, as soon as she starts to put on her headphones, everybody talk, but don't say words. And let's see if we can make her think that there's something wrong with the sound.
Okay.
I'm sure you hear exactly what you just said.
Okay, so she's about to wait. She's going to put the headphones back on. And...
joke's on you, motherfuckers. I plugged the headphones while I was muted. All the conversation. You can't get me.
First of all, you were all talking at the same time.
It'd have been an argument.
Secondly, I won Dodge on Friday. Don't fuck with me.
Secondly, the yellow square would have popped up, which it didn't. So I was just like, this really won't work.
Okay, so let's start tonight's show. This morning, North Carolina First Judicial District Attorney Andrew Wobble announced that he would not be filing charges against the officers who shot and killed Andrew Brown because after he claims he carefully looked at the evidence and the body cam videos, he decided that the use of deadly force was justifiable. Now, usually we would ask our panel for their reaction to the decision and they're welcome to give it if they'd like. But we thought that tonight we would instead ask a different and maybe more complicated question. So here it goes. Due to the many recent cases of excessive police force against people of color, have we now reached a point where any police shootings are going to be debated and protested regardless of whether they might be justifiable? So what are your thoughts on that? Elizabeth, let's start.
I'm unfortunately not super familiar with this case. So what were the circumstances that led to what they considered the necessary use of deadly force? Like, what was he accused of or being?
Pete can fill us in.
He was a drug dealer. He was a drug dealer with multiple arrests, multiple offenses, assault charges against him, carrying a deadly weapon, all the things that you definitely do not want somebody to be doing on the street. Mm-hmm. And he had a warrant out for his arrest. They came to take him and he was inside his car. And what he did was he started the car, backed it up, tried to turn, tried to turn and get away from them. And in theory, if you look at it from a certain angle, it does kind of look like from one angle that the car is just about to clip one of the cops. Mm-hmm. Although the cop puts his hand out onto the front of the car, so it's not that close. And then when he turns and starts driving away, they shot the car 14 times, and one of the shots shot him in the back of the head. Okay. And so, no, the question, I think, to me at least, is that The guy's not a saint by any means. You know, the world is not a worse place not having him in it. But that being said, is this a case of are we just going to, every time some police shooting happens, is there going to be like the intense amount of scrutiny of it that, I mean, probably in a lot of ways there should be, but is there going to be the intense amount of scrutiny and protests and everything else, no matter who the person is?
Oh, no matter the color of the person, you mean?
Like, oh, no, I'm just saying,
the nature of the person.
Nobody's ever protesting when a white guy gets shot because it doesn't happen.
I just wanted to clarify. I wanted to make it.
You know, I'm saying, like, when it is a person of color, are we going to ever get to a point now where we're like, where people are going to look at the facts first before they make these decisions? Or is Ben Crump just going to show up every place and collect his 30%?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a mixed bag and in that regard. And I think the best point a lot of people have made that the scrutiny should continue for the time being is, why did he need, 14 shots aimed at him when they've had mass shooters, say, taken without incident, without use of deadly force? And those mass shooters have almost exclusively been white in all those scenarios. And those mass shooters have often been taken out for snacks and Burger King and the like. So why do they get treated? And they've done, I'm not saying drug dealing and carrying weapons and all that is okay. It's obviously not. But these people have, like, slaughtered, in some cases, dozens, and been taken in with no incident. And why is that? So until that standard kind of, and I'm not saying I want cops to shoot those people necessarily either. I don't really want cops to shoot anybody, obviously, if it can be avoided at all. Yeah. But, why, again, why does his case warrant firing indiscriminately into the car versus safely taking like a Dylan Roof or the Kyle Rittenhouse or any of those types of people?
Yeah. And I think that's where the question is.
Yeah,
because
the question wasn't to pass judgment. It was just more to kind of say, are we going to get to a point where every one of these cases...
They're both bad things. Why does one warrant...
Yeah.
Or does one warrant the force? And the answer is, well, no, not really.
Ian?
I think they should all be scrutinized. Cops are not judge, jury, and executioner. It is not their job to pass judgment and kill people, especially somebody who's driving away. He's not a danger to them at that point. He's not backing up, and if he's backing up, they probably got time to move. So the fact that they're shooting at him as he's leaving makes it pretty clear that he wasn't an immediate danger to them. These all need to be scrutinized, because if we don't scrutinize all of them, they're going to keep pushing that line, and they're going to start killing more people that don't need to be killed.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. Go ahead, Joe.
I think it's interesting in this particular case, but, I mean, the reason why we and it's not a – old technology, it's fairly new, but the reason why we have cops wear body cams is so that there's there's some sort of video evidence of what's going on and to hold them accountable. But then when you have, like in this case, where they refuse to release the body cam and then say, oh, nothing was wrong, then it makes everyone feel like there's something fishy going on.
Suspicious.
I mean, I really think that there shouldn't even be like a situation where you don't get, it's okay that we're not going to release the body cam. I mean, unless there's an ongoing investigation into something, bigger, that it should always be released. Just like any, it should be something that the public should be able to get to be able to see if they want to. So, I mean, that's something that in this particular case, burn my biscuits.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Burn your souffle.
No, I mean, the thing with this case, and it's probably going to become a bigger issue, is the district attorney, I think, just didn't want to deal with it. He didn't want to, and because they knew that the FBI is actually looking into the case as well. So there might be federal charges against the police. So I think it was him just kind of like deferring this away from himself so he wouldn't have to deal with it. And what some of the criticism is that he did today, finally released some version of the body cam footage, but he released it from certain angles that probably tell a different story than, like, the cop that they're claiming that he was claiming, well, the car was driving at him. They're not showing the body cam footage from that cop's standpoint, probably because if you look at it from slow motion, he's not anywhere in front of the car. Like, he's to the side of the car. But when you're looking at it from the side angle from somebody else's camera, it does kind of look like he's in front of the car. But you could tell when the car turns that the car turns and it's not even close to him. It's, in fact, it's so far away from him that he put his hand on the hood of the car to try and, like tell the guy, stop, kind of thing. You know, and again, and it's a terrible circumstance, because the reality of it is, you know, these cops, I'm sure, for the most part, didn't go there to kill somebody. You know, I mean, I don't imagine that that any of them wake up any morning and want to kill somebody. And if you're going to kill somebody, somebody who's got like a record like this guy had, that's probably about as good a reason as anything. But at the same time, it's a terrible circumstance on all angles. I mean, again, the world's not a worse place off without Angel Brown in it, but it just shouldn't go the way it does. And that's the problem.
Yeah. So let's finish this topic with Elizabeth. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
But as Ian said, they should not have that power to decide indiscriminately like that. Was he like not a good guy? Yeah, but like, it should be turned to the court of law, prosecuted properly, all the steps that we think exist and are supposed to exist to ensure fairness and proper judgment and policing. But it truly is becoming, maybe they don't all get up wanting to kill somebody that day, but they're ready to, unfortunately, I think is the case.
Yeah.
And so much of society has, or not society so much, but so much of the culture has been like, it is the cops versus the people. And so that's like where all the Blue Lives Matter people come in, and they're like, it's, you know, so dangerous for them. But they're kind of always the aggressors in so many of these situations. And they're doing it, like, the training is to, like, basically shoot first and ask questions later now, it seems. Or at least it's being implemented that way.
It's just a sticky situation. I mean, the place where they kind of lose me a little bit, or the place where that argument that you're making loses me a little bit, mm-hmm. is that it's arguable to say that if when the cops came and got in front of his car, he'd be alive today had he not hit the gas to leave. I'm not justifying saying that then they should shoot and kill him. What I'm saying is that the minute they did that he did that, he gave them some kind of opening to do something that they shouldn't have done. You know,
I think there's still even alternatives to shooting to kill in that scenario. There's shooting the tires out. There's tasing potentially. I mean, the windows might be down. I'm no scientist.
You have someone like Kyle Rittenhouse where they actually let him just walk away.
Yeah.
Take him water, and he was still carrying a gun. And they said, you know what? We're not going to deal with it. Let justice, you know, do its thing. Let the courts decide whatever. And I think that's like what Elizabeth is saying.
On the other hand, I do
have a lot of family in law enforcement in the city of Chicago. And one of the things that, you know, that they, you know, some of them have been faced with, you know, where their lives have been threatened. I mean, guns pulled at them. And I think, you know, when it comes to like, you know, yeah, I mean, they have to protect themselves too. But because we've seen so much incompetence from the police, you know, recently, and versus how they treated, again, a white person like Kyle Rittenhouse, I think this issue just goes beyond everything we're talking about.
Yeah. It's a terrible situation no matter how you play
it. It's a terrible situation for everyone.
You could be put in that situation. You really don't know how you're going to react.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be like one of them and, you know, start shooting or do the right thing, which worked, you know, which... the right thing, the way we're thinking, but you know, you really don't know. And I'm like with you, Veronica, I have family in law enforcement, you know, and they have a different view on this. And it's a difficult situation for everybody involved.
You know, they say we, you know, until you've been faced in that situation where you feel like your life is at stake. But again, I'm not saying that's the case for every case we've seen recently, but you know, there are certain alternatives, like Ian was saying too. It's not their job to just do away with this person's life. But it's just like, there's a lot to consider. And it's sad that it's not just, you know, like no pun intended, like black or white. I mean, there's just like so much gray area in there. Mm-hmm. And
I don't know. I mean, that's yeah, what
it's,
I mean.
It's a tragedy for everybody involved.
For everybody involved, yeah. Mm-hmm. Joe?
I think one of the biggest things, and I'd say this from, at one point, I used to be a dispatcher in a small town in Florida. So that's basically the dispatcher in the police station. It's not like it's separate. So you get to know all the cops and things like that. And I think one of the biggest things and the biggest hurdle and problem, and all of you guys that have relatives in the police department know this too, it's this whole idea of having to like not say anything when you see that somebody is wrong, that there's a cop doing just egregious stuff. And I think that if we can end that culture, if we can get that going, we are 50% of the way there, to be honest with you. And mm-hmm. I think that's the whole thing, because everybody's like, they see this guy, he thinks he's in the Marines, he's a badass, he's always doing stuff, but no one wants to say anything because there's this, you know, there's this cop code. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's one of the things that really has to end. I know it's tough, and I know it's like, they're like, well, what if I'm paired with that guy that day and he knows that I said something and things like that? It's rough and it's tough, but I think that's the bit, one of the big things is in the culture that has to change. That's and crazy. I hope that, because if we could do that, we would so just, I think, like I said, I think we'd be halfway there.
You know, and just doing that alone, Joe, would be a huge step.
Right.
You know, to changing this, but it's all about accountability and, you know, stepping up, you know, not whether you're, you know, you're a cop or just in life in general, when you see something wrong, you know, we're taught to stand up and say, you know what, speak up. This isn't right. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If we got to that point, we could definitely make changes, I think. Now, whether we're going to get to that point or not, who knows, unfortunately. So, okay, so let's move on now. Yesterday, we talked about the confusion over the CDC's new guidance, stating that anyone who has been fully vaccinated can go maskless in most public indoor and outdoor settings. Now, first, let me ask you, California is not planning on removing the mask mandates until June 15th. When they do end that mandate, are you planning to go maskless since we've all been fully vaccinated? Elizabeth, let's start with you.
Probably not in like public scenarios like grocery stores, or even if I go back to like the movies or something like that, or kind of any big space with a lot of people. Probably not. Like I bought myself tickets for a comedy show in July. I will probably still wear a mask in the theater, even though it's like a reduced capacity thing. And they're asking you to, I think, show proof of vaccination or at least, you know, a clean COVID test at the door. I'll still probably wear a mask.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I feel the same way too. People, yeah. Especially around people that you don't know.
Yeah.
Pete?
See, I think, you know, strangely enough, that for a little while after they get rid of the mask mandate, that I'll be even less apt to go places.
Yeah,
I think it's actually going to have the wrong effect, because I think, like we were joking around yesterday, but I think the best way to tell the people that haven't gotten vaccinated is by who's the people not wearing a mask, you know, when they raise the mandates, because I think that, you know, anybody with any sensibility is going to say that there's still way too many people that haven't been vaccinated. I mean, here in California, only something like 41 or 42% of residents have been vaccinated. 42%. So that means if you're in a room with 10 people, six of those people haven't been vaccinated. So, I mean, that's bad odds. Mm-hmm. I mean, and even if we're there's a 94% chance nothing bad is going to happen, you still could get it. You still could give it to other people. And there's a 6% chance actually something bad could happen to you. And so, you know what? I mean, I don't know like how gamblers like to roll the dice for like financial gain, for financial loss. But I don't want to, you know, roll those dice for my life. And so, yeah, I think that for a while after the mandates change, I'm just going to stay away from places. I just I don't think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Danny.
If it's at work, I will definitely take my mask off just because I know everybody on our floor is vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So I'm good there. But as soon as I step out the building, mask back on. You know, there's a lot of patients walking around. You know, you don't know where they're coming from. You don't want to judge, but you just want to protect yourself. You know, in mixed company, if I know the people, I know they're vaccinated, I'm okay. But if somebody brings someone that I don't know or that, you know, I'm not familiar with, mm-hmm. I am going to be like, let me put it back on until, you know, somehow, some way it's confirmed that they're also vaccinated. You know, and that's just not just for my protection, but for theirs too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We feel the same way. Exactly. I'm Elizabeth.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. My office we're not going back till September, but they were also saying they aren't really going to, they're not going to require masks and social distancing. Obviously it's up to you if you want to. That's a scenario where I think I'd feel okay because I feel like I'm pretty confident all my coworkers are vaccinated. But I don't believe my company is requiring it of people and or checking to see if they are. And so that I think if I didn't feel like I knew everybody and that I work with well enough, I would definitely keep wearing a mask. I'm definitely going to wear a mask during cold and flu season. Because I think that's going to be the biggest shift. And I think the smartest shift, you know, I know that was sort of like a popular thing in more Asian countries is people wearing masks in public if they were sick. And we were all like, oh, that's stupid and weird and foreign. And now it's like, that was genius. We're idiots.
How many people here got the cold or the flu this past few months?
Not a one. And I get that I'm so prone to them. Like the first person down in the office to get a cold or flu every time. And this year I was like, oh, I never had a cold. That's fantastic. So yeah, I know we talked about it yesterday. I won't bring it up, but I am just baffled by the guidance. I'm not sure I understand why the choice was made. Actually, I'm lying. I do. It's to get everybody back to work and get that economy going, baby.
Yeah, and now it's all a scam because now you can't call in sick because it's like, oh, you were wearing a mask. You didn't get sick.
But it's about the science. They say if you look at the science, in theory, everybody who's been vaccinated can be in
but
around
not
other
everybody's vaccinated.
But yeah, but not awesome. Enough people are getting vaccinated.
They're not using common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to ask you this question, but I already know the answer, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. But aren't you guys concerned that there's going to be people that are unvaccinated just walking around, no mask at all? Like, what the hell? Like, that's, you know, I don't know. It just, yeah, the CDC, I don't know where like what you said, Elizabeth, I think it is for the economy more than anything else.
Yeah.
But I mean, it really is. Like, this is one time that I will criticize them for the mixed messaging. Because it makes no sense. Because it's like they didn't even like ease us into it. It was like, bam, that's it.
Yeah.
We're not, you know.
And I think they're kicking it to the states too. Like, but like states are lifting things, and some companies are like Trader Joe's is saying, oh, you don't need a mask to come into our store. But I'm like, I'm still wearing a fucking mask at Trader Joe's. Most of those Trader Joe's are so goddamn tiny. The biggest one I've been in is the new one they built near me in North Hollywood. That is like a damn spacious Trader Joe's, and that's still not the biggest grocery store I've ever been in.
To be fair, it's the only people that don't get to wear masks are the ones that get to park in the parking lot. So that's only like three people.
Yeah,
but that is a good observation, though, Elizabeth. Like most Trader Joe's are tiny. And they were like the first ones that were like, okay, you don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah, I was like, excuse me, Trader Joe. I did not know you were anti-mask.
Yeah. So the reason why I asked this is because the internet has been abuzz since the weekend with a video of former child actor Ricky Shorter having a Karen moment when he was denied entry into a Costco because he refused to wear a mask. Let's watch some of it.
What's your name?
My name is Jason.
And what do you do here?
I'm a supervisor, front-end supervisor.
And why aren't you letting me in?
Because in the state of California, in the county of Los Angeles, there has been Costco, there's been no change to our mask policy. Not in the state of California or in the county of Los Angeles.
Didn't you see the news? You didn't see the news. Nationwide Costco has said you don't need to wear a mask. Allow us, if they grant us that, our kings, the people in power, you're going to listen to these people?
Well, I know
they've destroyed our economy.
Well,
they're destroying our
evaluating.
Culture. They're destroying our state.
I see.
And you're just going to listen to their rules.
Well, what we are going to do is simply follow the guidelines.
Okay.
I'm getting my refund. I'm getting my refund from Costco. I suggest everybody in California get their refund from Costco. Give up your membership to Costco until they remove this.
Brings new, shorter lines.
Yeah.
So how many of you knew of Ricky Schroeder's like work prior to this? I mean, we're all pretty much the same.
Silver Spoons, baby. So,
a couple of Silver Spoons.
I still don't know how he got on NYPD Blue. I mean, that's just, so he must have had pictures of somebody.
Probably. Okay, so clearly Ricky is not looking for a Hollywood comeback, because yesterday he went online and doubled down on his feelings about the pandemic with a half-assed apology. Let's take a look.
Let's talk for 1 second.
Oh, I'll say something. I'll fill some time. Give Jason a fucking raise for putting up with that.
Oh, I'm sure he's become very popular.
That guy a promotion and a raise.
Which Costco was this, by the way? Which one?
You know what? There was a rumor. Like I was trying to find the location, and some places were saying it was our Costco here in Woodland Hills. Okay. But I think he lives up in like Calabasas, Malibu area. Maybe. So I don't know. I was trying to find the location, but I couldn't find the exact one. But they were saying that Jason has a bigger following now than Ricky Schroeder. And Ricky Schroeder also put it on his Instagram, too, today.
I was going to say,
we're ready for the video.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to make a dumb champ joke.
Watch his apology.
Okay, let's watch this.
I was out in Hollywood the other night. You should have seen the sense of lawlessness just running around. It was felt on the edge of safety. It felt on the edge of out of control. Same thing in Santa Monica last night. Do you remember how it used to feel in L.A.? It was safe. Do you remember how it used to feel like when we all felt safer in the 80s? And I think we can get back there. And I think we need to get back there as a nation. And I think I know how to help us get back there. But I do think that independence from medical tyranny is more important than hurting people's feelings. And so I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. But I want us all to be free. I want us all to go back to the way it was. I don't want this COVID reality they want. COVID passports, and I just don't want it. And neither should you. Friends, while today may seem like all hope is lost, it's not. While today may appear like a sure victory for those people whose thirst for power knows no limits and blinds them to their responsibilities to we the people, it is not. Today, January 20th, 2021, is the world's great awakening. Hundreds of millions of freedom-loving people around the globe now see and understand who our oppressors are. There's nothing they're not capable of. In my opinion, the Biden-Harris administration is corrupt. It's enabled by Communist Party sympathizers within the political establishments of both major U.S. political parties, federal agencies, and corporate America. They employ their agents in big tech, entertainment, and media to confuse the American voter, hiding information necessary to make informed election decisions. What in the hell is going on, folks? Why is the First Amendment being destroyed on social media? Why is relevant news being hidden? These are Nazi tactics employed to silence dissent. This is not the new normal I'm willing to accept, and I'm certain my oppressors won't return America to the America that I know and love willingly.
What about privacy? What about the people that don't want to have vaccinations? What's supposed to happen to them? We're supposed to separate them, segregate them, treat them differently? Is that what the plan is? Because I don't think that's going to sit well with a lot of Americans. And you know, all of us literally at this moment have to step up and say no more, no mask mandates. We have to boycott any of these companies that are forcing people to wear masks to go in. No way. The airline industry that's calling for this COVID vaccination passport, we need to tank their companies. We need to tank their stocks. I don't know if the Reddit guys know how to do that, but everybody needs to sell every airline stock they own.
Yeah. Okay, wait, yeah, I got, sorry, talk.
What? Should I repeat my question? No.
Yeah, because it sounds...
I'm saying, like, none of us here are psychiatrists or psychologists, but doesn't it seem like he's a little mentally unstable?
I mean, like he's on something.
A little?
But he just seems a little QAnon-ish.
Yeah, I think it's... I don't think it's exactly a mental illness as could be diagnosed, but it's definitely, like, the sucked into the QAnon nonsense. For sure, like Ian said, it's how are you fucking oppressed, my guy? Like,
so it's he'll always, be running for governor, right?
Yeah, him and Caitlin on the same ticket could be great. He wants to reboot the 80s so bad, the communists hiding in the government. We got to get back to the 80s when things were better. Oh, you mean when you were like on top of the world? Safe.
And cocaine was more accessible?
Yeah, don't, you know.
But correct me if I'm wrong, because I wasn't out here, but wasn't it like a shithole out here in the 80s?
Yeah, Hollywood was fucking war zone.
Yeah.
You did not want to be in Hollywood in the 80s.
Yeah, I don't remember that, like, it being so safe out here. For what I remember Boys in the Hood got made.
In the 90s, there was a million jokes about being carjacked in L.A. that to this day, when I moved out of here, I was a little like, that's over, right? Like, when I was driving across the country. Yeah. Like, that carjacking epidemic kind of died down, right? Okay, good.
L.A. also had the Night Stalker in the 80s.
Yeah. So how safe
are you? That was not good advertising.
Had a good time.
And that guy was scary.
Yeah, but Ricky lived in a different world in those 80s.
Lived in the Silver Spoons world.
He didn't know what regular people were going through. It was a
really fancy mansion, yeah.
Yeah. So last year, he also caused a stir for helping raise money for Kenosha, Wisconsin murderer Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah, fuck that.
So let me ask, there were others who defended Rittenhouse, and there are certainly several millions of people who are going to be more than happy to not wear masks in public, regardless of whether they got vaccinated. Why do you think it is that society seems more outraged when these beliefs are held by people we have seen on TV or in movies? I think because we sometimes have this image of these people that they have to be a certain way, or, you know, like when I think we talked about this a couple days ago on the show, when you find something horrible out about like an actor or actress that you admire so much, that it's like you kind of feel like, you know, like they're like your friend, but then you found out like something really terrible about them and you want to have anything to do with them. That's what I think it is. What do you think, Pete?
Well, I think it definitely has to do with, especially when it comes to the child actors, you mm-hmm. see a lot of these people from the time they're kids. And so there's some kind of emotional connection to a lot of them, because especially if they're on a show that lasts a few years, and Ricky Schroeder was, I looked it up earlier, he was kind of famous from the time he was about 7 until the time he was about 16. So because there was The Champ, there was a bunch of other movies, then there was 5 seasons or so on Silver Spoon. So he had this arc of time when you saw him go from from being a young kid to being a teenager. And that same thing happens when you see like the Brady Bunch, or you see just about any of these other like kid actors that eventually then, grow up. And like, I, especially if you're like I remember being in the 80s, and being the same age as the two Coreys, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim. And so you related to that kind of thing. And then for them to turn into the most abysmal screw ups, it kind of is disappointing, because you think to yourself, well, the only difference between me and them is money. And so money changed them for the worse. And that's, I think, kind of where you start to kind of get that disappointment factor from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I'm Elizabeth.
Yeah, it's the parasocial.
She frozen?
She froze.
It's a good shot of her, though.
Yeah.
Elizabeth.
You know, ask Elizabeth.
She's just got a haircut.
Yeah, she's really young.
It's that new expensive internet in her
expensive relationship where you like feel your identity.
Oh, no.
Damn. I didn't realize she was frozen.
Froze? I didn't hear anything.
It's not internet connection. No, that's okay. It says my internet connection is unstable, but everybody's moving again. Okay. I was saying it's the like parasocial nature of our relationship with celebrity, where you think you know them because you see them one way and they present a certain amount of themselves in a certain way to the public. But then once that changes or falters, then your perception is shattered and that messes with your head. Not to get too off topic, but everybody has been flipping out about John Mulaney divorcing his wife and seemingly dating Olivia Munn. And so everybody's losing it and like suddenly making all these assumptions about him, his wife, their relationship, what happened with them, because he talked about it in his stand-up. But that's the stand-up is true, but it is also exaggerated. So the truth is you have no clue what happened in his life. You have no clue what his relationship with his wife is like. You have no clue of his relationship, if there is one, with him dating Olivia Munn. So to make any kind of assumptions or say you're disappointed in him, well, he wasn't really doing any of that for you. That was his life. And yes, he presented it in his stand-up and was very honest about it, but to a degree, it's still performed on stage. It's not really what's happening. And so when you have like child stars or people you admire, and you think of them this very certain way, and then they change it on you just by being human and changing, it messes with your head. That said, it is always disappointing when they're a celebrity you like. It's like, you know what I hate?
You know what I hate when Elizabeth freezes up.
Joe, why don't you jump in right now? And
I think if you don't want to be this, in this particular case with this particular actor.
You know what I love? QAnon. And you're like, oh!
I was about to say.
All I heard was Elizabeth saying, "I love QAnon."
No! Oh, my internet! Let me see if I can switch the
soundbite.
QAnon? What?
All right, Elizabeth loves QAnon.
Why is my internet connection unstable? Since I got full bars.
I just want to say, for this particular case with this particular actor, if you don't want to be disappointed, if you want to be less disappointed, it's really simple. Just take the R off his name, and then you won't be disappointed anymore.
Ricky Schroeder? You're
smart ass.
I know what his joke was, and I flipped it.
I'm just so glad
I the people at home. I'm making the people at home do some mental math now.
But that gets to the bigger question then. Are famous people allowed to be just as troubled and morally challenged as the rest of us? Or does their fame come with certain limitations? They're human beings, right?
They're human.
No, they must be flawless and perfect. Harry Styles is perfect.
Well, I think that's where the problems come in, where people have these, you know, certain expectations that, you know, celebrities have to be 100% perfect and they just can't have any flaws or... You know, I mean, that's what I think. Danny.
That it's true because growing up, I used to think, you know, being a celebrity was like, you know, they're way up here, we're down here. And it was kind of like a royalty type thing where they're royalty and we're just like the peasants. But as I grew up and started becoming friends with, you know, some of my high school friends who were in the business and now having friends that are in the business and are celebrities as well. And some of you know people like that too. You realize they're just people like you and me. You know, they go through the same type of stress and anxieties and frustrations that the rest of us go through. You know, those that are parents go through the same thing. You know, the difference may be just money. You know, but at the end of the day, they're just people like you and me. The day I met Halle Berry at the movie theater, I was so excited. I ran back to where we were sitting. I told my best friend, I just met Halle Berry. He's like, sit down and shut up. She takes a poop just like you and me. And I never really understood that, you know. And I learned to understand that, you know, they're just people. They do everything we do.
Exactly. We just happen to know everything that they do.
Yeah.
First, I want to correct Danny. She doesn't take a poop like you or me. She probably takes a much bigger one, but it doesn't stink because we know her shit.
What?
just saying. But no, I mean,
he eats a lot of fiber. What?
The problem I think it is at least in today's society, is that celebrities nowadays, because of the amount of scrutiny and the amount of people that are just able to kind of like find you and find out what you're doing at any given time, you know, they have to realize anytime they do even the slightest thing wrong, it's going to be an issue for them. And I think that, you know, like I get it. Like, I think the problem that we have, like, I think one of the reasons why we kind of celebrate when a celebrity falls on his face is because they don't have just themselves. They have teams of people, you know, teams of people that are telling them when not to do something, when to do something. And I get it. Yeah. You're going to want to rebel against that every so often, but like rebelling, nobody seems to care. I mean, most of the things Justin Bieber has done wrong over the years, they were explained away, you know, because he was young and, you know, young and dumb doing things like other kids his age did. But it's like when you do something like really wrong, like when you do something like, you know, I mean, again, is it really wrong that this idiot, you know, filmed himself trying to get into a Costco and being denied? It's not technically wrong, but what's where the wrong comes in is the fact that he outed himself to do it. Like he actually put the video up, you know, and you know, maybe
doing the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe because he knows there's really no gravity any longer because his career is non-existent, it's okay. And I guess this kind of gets people to talk about him because, like, we're doing it right now. It's not such a big deal. But when you see a lot of these celebrities that go and do things that are clearly things that they could have avoided doing, that's why I think we all sit here and say, you know, good, I'm glad to see them fall on their face because there's a lot of opportunities for them not to screw up, and they do. You know, and again, everybody's human, but like some of the times when some of these people screw up, it's so obviously, you know, it's so obviously that something that goes against everything that they should have been, that they should have known about celebrity at this point. And that's where I think, you know, the crux of the problem comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joe.
Well, and the other thing with celebrity, I mean, let's first off, Ricky Schroeder obviously doesn't have people. Otherwise we wouldn't have seen that video pop up on there. I think it's people as John Voight called him. He's like, hey, mm-hmm. champ, hey, you should post that video. but like for the most part, I think celebrities, in a way, I feel kind of bad for them. I can go down in the morning in my pajama pants to the mailbox and grab my mail and come back up. I can donate. I just donated $25 to Meals on Wheels and things like that. You know, a celebrity has to like curate every single thing they do because of, you know, if Angelina Jolie goes down to the mailbox in pajama pants, it's going to be in every magazine or it's going to be on every website and stuff like that. It's kind of
crazy. Her
life
is falling apart. Check the mail in sweatpants.
Right. If you want to donate to a charity, all of a sudden you're showing some sort of political side, which is kind of crazy. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens. So, I mean, I think that there's, you know, even a bigger, like that would. But that would just boil my brain. It really would. I mean, I was like every single thing I got to think twice about before I do. And then when you're a big celebrity, maybe that's the thing. Don't be a big celebrity. Be like a character actor where you can kind of just like slide in and it's not so bad. But you're a big celebrity. Everything you got to think about every single thing you do before you do it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's in a way, that's kind of a sad existence. Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
So there is no shortage of child actors who grew up to have major issues. In fact, this is nothing new to Hollywood, as young actors for as far back as the beginnings of Hollywood have had problems that essentially either ended their careers or at least stalled them. Let's look at some of them, and then we can try and rank the best and worst child actor transitions to adulthood. Okay, so let's go to each person and have you tell me one child actor who had a horrible transition into adulthood, which severely damaged their career and or lives, and one who did it well. So who wants to start? Who can think of one off the top of their head? Let's start with you, Ian.
Leif Garrett. Nobody knows who that is anymore. Peter does. Peter's a Leif Garrett.
Joe's got to know, too.
I know Leif Garrett.
He fucked up pretty bad. I never really.
Isn't that impressive that we're all that, like, all cool about the fact that we know Leif Garrett?
Fuck yeah, man. Tiger beat. he was a major fuck up. I was talking to Peter about this earlier. Natalie Portman, she really did great. She never ran, except for the Star Wars movies, she never really had any bumps, you know?
Okay. Danny, what about you?
Amanda Bynes. Mm-hmm. For the not so good, the good Leo DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, I don't think we have him on the list. Pete?
Well, I mean, I think if you're gonna talk about, you know, child actors that made good, I think the ultimate is Ron Howard. I mean, because Ron Howard never, from the time he was about four, never didn't work a day in his life and has never had anybody say a bad word about him. You know, when he realized his acting career was no longer going to be something that he was going to be in demand, he just started directing and then became one of the, arguably the biggest director for about 20 years. And then on the flip side, I think if you're going to talk about like people that like just complete and utter train wrecks, I mean, there's just so many to go to, but I mean, me personally, I think Lindsay Lohan really kind of epitomizes it because she could not have been a bigger star off of Mean Girls and off of Freaky Friday. And people won't even touch her now. Like, I mean, she is like a cautionary tale of everything you could do wrong and still somehow or another not be dead. So that would be my two.
Okay, Elizabeth, what about you?
It's sort of a blend of good and bad, as I'd say Drew Barrymore, because she had a really rough transition from, you know, her childhood into teen years, but she turned it around and is still doing well to this day. And then as far as like truly like bad, or I'm trying to think. Was a kid from Terminator.
Edward Furlong.
Yeah, he's not doing so great, right?
Did he die?
Oh my god, I feel really bad if I forgot.
He's really bad.
I think he killed himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
I know he was like a major alcoholic and drug addict, so I mean, I think you're right, though, he's dead.
I think, yeah. Apologies if he's not, but...
You know what? You survive a killing machine chasing you around Los Angeles to see how you turn out.
Yeah.
Actually, no, he's still alive.
I don't think he died, no.
Apologies for thinking he's dead, but he's not doing well for quite some time. Those were kind of the two that popped into my brain. Like I said, Drew Barrymore is kind of a mix of the two, but she pulled through the bad times. I guess, like, as far as totally smooth sailing, maybe Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's not, like, a huge, huge star anymore, but he's, like, just chill, coasting and enjoying his life and like doing just interesting stuff that he wants to do. He doesn't seem to be under the pressure to be a star.
So I'm going to give you guys a list. We have a list of bad transitions. How do you want me to do this, Pete? Want me to read them all?
Yeah, just read them off. I mean, there are no particular order.
Okay, so we have anyone on Different Strokes, Gary Coleman and Dana Plato are dead. Todd Bridges went to jail for drug offenses and assault with a deadly weapon. We also have Lindsay Lohan, the Coreys, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. Now, Corey Haim, drug addiction death. Amanda Bynes, I think Danny, you mentioned her. Mm-hmm. Aaron Carter, Bella Thorne, Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, is Bella Thorne doing poorly, or we just don't like what she's doing?
She's a fuck up. I mean, that actually kind of brings you to an interesting question. Like you have two women on this, or two young women on the same show, because she and Zendaya were both on a Disney show together.
Pump it up, something. Yeah, and the fact
that one of them turned out so well. I mean, because Zendaya is like,
she won an Emmy. She's doing great.
An Emmy. She's like, a lot of people praise her. Like, and she's so young.
Yeah.
And then you got Bella Thorne bending over, showing a crack on OnlyFans. Like, how does that happen? Like, how do you get like a perfect example? Dylan Sprouse is a fuck up, but Cole Sprouse turned out good. I mean, it's like, how does that all work out? I mean, I just don't get it.
Well, we also, Ian, did you want to add something?
I would be really curious the difference between the child rearing for Bella Thorne.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think parenting comes down in a lot of these scenarios.
For sure. We also have Dustin Diamond, who tragically passed away recently. Mm-hmm. Mark Voorhees from Saved by the Bell. Now, the next two people, Pete and I kind of had a discussion about this. We said, okay, they didn't really get themselves into trouble that we know of, but it's just like where they are today. Like you have Kirk Cameron, for instance, who was like basically flaunting like, oh, you know, we don't have to wear masks. COVID's like not really, you know, like.
Lord will rapture me eventually. It'll be fine.
You know? Scott Baio's another one, too, that his career just kind of like tanked. And then he's like, you know, we love Trump and all this is a lie. Aaron Moran, who died, and
was a mess.
That was sad. Very sad.
And we also added Britney Spears on here as well. Mm,
yeah.
I mean, that was a weird question too, because with Britney, it's like she's technically, you know, I mean, she's still viable. I mean, like if she puts out a record tomorrow, it's going to sell. If she does a show tomorrow, it's going to sell. But her issues, between her personal issues with her family and then her obvious, like she does have some emotional issues. So it's kind of like, is she a bad transition, or is she just in this weird place? Like 10 years from now, we might be saying she's Drew Barrymore, mm-hmm. you know, where she had went through a rough streak and then turned around.
Well, that's just it. We just won't know just yet. I mean, yeah. I think we'll have, you know, a couple of years.
There's a lot more to go for Britney, I think, before we can declare anything one way or the other.
Joe, and then I'll go to Elizabeth. Go ahead, Joe.
I would not put Kirk Cameron on that list. Kirk Cameron was always a super religious dude. They even had, you know, things when they were filming on there. Mm-hmm. And he's gone on. Now, granted, his whole Trump thing is part of his religious thing, but he's gone on to do a lot of movies and produce a lot of movies in that genre. So we don't see him in our regular mainstream media, but if you want to go into ultra Christian stuff, he's still a pretty big star in that. So I really don't want to put him in that thing, because he's still doing, you know, that's where his income is coming in, and he produces a lot of this stuff. And I think he's one of the investors in that Christian like streaming service and stuff like that. He's probably not making, you know, Hollywood money, but I mean, look at, if you compare it to some of the other people on this list, I really wouldn't put him on there.
No, but you could say the same thing about Scott Baio. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to have Scott Baio's life. You know,
I mean, it's Scott Baio, like,
but he wasn't as successful.
Like, I'm not seeing him do what Kirk Cameron's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, it's not, you know, he got to, he did Happy Days. He did a few movies. Then he did Charles in Charge, and that was successful. And then, you know, I mean, other than just banging every, you know,
yeah, but he's not doing anything. My point is that Kirk Cameron is still doing stuff.
He's producing in a genre content
that we don't normally
see. Yeah, no, of course, yeah.
He's working.
And you guys want to talk about disappointments? Scott Baio was a huge disappointment to me. I loved him. I was such a fan of his. Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think that list is interesting. I think we mentioned it earlier that a lot of it definitely comes down to parenting and how the parents interact mm-hmm. with their child once they become a child star. Did anyone watch that documentary that was on HBO last year that I think Alex Winter directed it and had Evan Rachel Wood and a lot of other people who have been child stars? I think it was Will Wheaton who said he doesn't really have a good relationship with his mom because his mom really, really pushed him, you know, into things, and he wasn't really happy and didn't have that's the situation where the parenting maybe wasn't that good and it could have gone really poorly for him, but he has been able to really turn it into a positive.
Yeah.
Not the parenting part, but just his life.
Look at like the documentary the Soling Moon Fry did.
I have to watch
But that, I mean, like that, you know, like half the people that she was friends with are dead.
Yeah.
You know, like she actually, and the ones who didn't die are all fucked up. So it's like there's clearly a lot of pressure that gets put on these kids because they become part of million-dollar franchises. And they're in positions when they're children that, you know, adults probably couldn't handle a lot of times.
And I know there was a 90s. The interesting thing about that documentary is because she used to film everything. So you're seeing a lot of stuff of what their lives were like then. And if you watch that, it's like you wonder, that's no wonder Ricky Schroeder wants that back. Because these people were just like jumping down to the beach in their convertible and like having cocaine and sex. And it was like, yeah, we weren't, but they were, because they were stars. So yeah, that's why Ricky Schroeder wants
a midlife. It's a midlife crisis that hits even harder because your younger life was fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And now your midlife is mediocre, but you were not used to mediocre for so long. You only had the top, you know, top kind of life. And then it went away. And yeah, that's another mindfuck thing. Doesn't excuse the Trumpism or QAnon business, but you know.
No, but it does, you know, like it just goes back to what we were saying about parenting. So growing up, one of my closest friends was actually a child actor. And I won't say who it is because I respect his privacy and he doesn't want to talk about it anymore. But, you know, his parents were very, very involved in everything that he did. And it got to the point that, you know, he used to be on set, you know, most of the week. And then when he would come back to school, the kids would literally pick him up and put him in a trash can. Like, they hated him so much. They were so jealous of him. And, you know, and it got to the point where his parents pulled him out of the business for a while. And then he went back and then he realized that this isn't what he wanted to do. But just like watching everything he was going through and just, I mean, I didn't see him as the actor. He was my friend. He was my buddy. He was my neighbor too. So it's like, you know, just seeing him as a regular person, but also seeing him, you know, in terms where he didn't want to go on set anymore because the pressure was so much for him. And I didn't understand that as a kid though, because, you know, he was a couple years older than me. And then I was just like, oh, it sounds like so much fun. You know, I got to go to Disneyland for free with him a couple times. And, you know, we got to do all this fun stuff, go to Universal Studios. But he was the one that was like, you know, going through all of this. And it's, again, it's so much pressure to put on such a young person who at the same time is also developing emotionally as well. So it just, it was really sad, but I'm very happy that he's doing what he wants to do now. So,
admit to it. It's Menudo's own Ricky Martin.
Oh no, just, you lost me.
I said he's no longer in the business. That's what I said.
You lost me at getting to go to Disneyland for free. I'm just,
yeah, it's not just to stare up into space.
How wonderful would that be?
Well, he used to have the perks, and I used to benefit from some of those perks because, you know, I'd go with him and, you know, we went to Universal Studios a couple times, did the private guided tours with him and I mean, it was great. I was like, oh my God, I want to be a child actress now too, because I get all this free stuff. But now in hindsight, you know, when talking to him as an adult, everything he was going through, and he was also dealing with other emotional stuff, it's just, it's not very glamorous. I mean, it really isn't. There's nothing glamorous about that. But so let me go to the good transitions. So we have Ron Howard, who we talked about, Jodie Foster, Dakota and Elle Fanning, Natalie Portman, we also talked about. We have Claire Danes.
Yeah.
The Harry Potter crew, Emma Watson, Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert, is it Gint?
Grint. Yeah.
And the R is missing. Kieran Culkin, Selena Gomez, Ariana Grande, Zendaya, Raven Simone, Cole Sprouse, Zac Efron, Fred Savage, and Danica McKellar. And from the Saved by the Bell crew, we have Mario Lopez, Tiffany Thiessen, and Mark Paul Gosselaar. So, any thoughts on any of those before we move on to the last?
Ariana.
Or Elizabeth Berkley.
Elizabeth Berkley, is she? Why is she not on the list, Pete?
Well,
come on, showgirl.
I think she was supposed to be on. We have three lists. We have the bad, the good, and the was bad but turns into good.
Oh, okay.
And Elizabeth Berkley kind of fits into that third category because,
yeah,
you know, which is weird because out of the gate she was the most successful out of any of them, but she was successful for shit that she shouldn't have done, like Showgirls.
Showgirls is amazing.
Showgirls is
the greatest
fantastic
movie ever. It's a great movie. I love that movie.
It's a Versace.
Oh, is Nicole Richie on that list too?
No, because Nicole Richie really wasn't a celebrity. I mean, Nicole Richie was basically always Lionel Richie's daughter and then Paris Hilton's friend. She really was she was never a celebrity for any reason.
Yeah, but by association.
Yeah.
She didn't really produce anything, you know?
Yeah,
appeared. Oh, except a fashion line eventually, but that took a while.
Yeah.
So the last group is the somewhere in between young actors whose transition started out bad, but eventually turned out okay. So we talked about Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. I think probably one of the biggest success stories has been Robert Downey Jr., how he was able to life around and become one of the most successful actors of all time. We have Jared Leto, Macaulay Culkin.
He's
turned around, right?
I think he's got a baby now, right?
Yeah, baby on the way.
Miley Cyrus, you know, she's had her ups and downs, but Justin Bieber, Hilary Duff, Winona Ryder, Melissa Joan Hart, anyone on the Brady Bunch, and we have Elizabeth Berkley on here.
Yeah, I knew I had her on something.
Yay!
So, yeah, I think from this list, like I said, I think Robert Downey Jr. is probably just such a great example of someone that was able to bounce back.
Yeah.
And have like the greatest career. And he does so much wonderful work with kids and on top of everything else. And I think
What about Donnie and Marie?
They never had a bad period.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, though. But I mean, they're the, I mean, Donnie's still running Vegas, so.
We also forgot Justin Timberlake. I know y'all be hating on
me. Yeah, but I mean, Justin Timberlake didn't really.
He didn't really have a stumble.
He was on the Disney Channel.
Yeah, you know, Disney he was a child star, but he.
You know what? To be fair, we did include Britney.
He did include Britney.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's a fair argument. Yeah.
As I say, he's definitely on the good transition list because he never really stumbled. He just went from success to success to success.
Yeah, he just killed everybody else around him.
Yeah, he just left a crater in his wake. JC should have been the star.
Pretty much. So that's our final list. So, okay. Well, I guess that's our show tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. Bye.